You're going to have to kind of do an about face on old Chucky.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They have a real shot. The whole Trent Brown thing this week's not so good. Their offensive tackle with the domestic violence.
Oh, yeah.
Allegations.
Yeah, that was a
not good.
Creator.
But yes, it has gone better than I expected. My criticism of John Gruden has not been from a coaching standpoint. It's been the roster management standpoint. But they've made some moves that have paid off. Some where they is low risk, like with Waller, who they just gave an extension to. That's a good story there, tied in Darren Waller. So it's working out. We'll see if it continues. Big game this weekend against the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, I will have not seen it coming, especially with the roster moves that were made early on. Amari Cooper, Khalil Mack. I mean, you were like, what are we doing here? You know, I would not, knowing that, and then if you guys do make the playoffs, that will very much. I mean, because you got to factor everything in, and that would be a huge surprise.
What if the Raiders make the playoffs and the Bears and Cowboys do not?
Oh, which is totally possible at this point.
Raiders have a head-to-head win against the Bears.
Yep.
Dallas
was that
is having
a Thursday
a bit of a
night game?
Time.
That was a Thursday night game, wasn't it?
Sunday game in London.
Okay, that's what it was.
Yep. So you've got that going on tonight. It's the Broncos and Chiefs for your Thursday night football action. Should be good. We've talked Tennessee, Alabama as well. Joey Kent on last hour, part of the conversation that's going on is Tennessee-Alabama. It's a rivalry that does not look like a rivalry on the field right now because of the one-sided nature. Not only is Alabama winning, it's not just that. It's that Alabama goes in essentially knowing it's going to win. There was the 2015 game where Tennessee had a shot there.
Close.
And in 2009, Tennessee had a really good chance as you're trying to hit
to
a field goal.
Winning field goal, yeah.
And Terrence Cotey had something to say about that. But that's it since Nick Saban arrived.
Who knew that Terrence Cotey could jump that high? But we also found years later, Daniel Lincoln had suffered a massive quad injury, and they were just like,
dude. Yeah, I don't think it was as much as vertical.
Yeah. I mean, it hit him right in the belly button.
So
crazy.
That was
so
10 years ago.
Yeah. I loved the piece that Chris Lowe did on Lane Kiffin a couple of weeks ago. And he was talking about that game in the piece, and he said, just looking across the sideline, he said that was almost a win enough for me, seeing Nick Saban's face like colorless because all the blood had drained out of it.
Yeah, Lane said that's the last time, this is paraphrased, the last time you beat us or beat me, whatever, which you know, technically it's true.
Yeah, he said, yeah, that's the last time you're going to beat me. Yeah.
Lane ended up working for him, as you know as well,
exactly.
At Alabama.
I think that's that would be labeled beating into submission, right? If you then have to go get a job from the guy.
It is kind of funny the two times Tennessee has had a shot to beat Alabama since Nick Saban arrived, both in Tuscaloosa, 2009, 2015.
Oh, are you calling something here?
Hey, where is it playing?
Going for it on fourth down?
Where are they playing on Saturday, Knoxville or Tuscaloosa?
Tuscaloosa.
Hey.
There you go. Joey Kent in the house.
Joey Kent's going to be there. He was there in 2015.
Totally was. And he was there in the early 90s when Tennessee was whooping Bama.
Yeah.
He was a big part of that.
Yeah. Okay, so what I would do, I'd put Juwan in the slot, play number one. Guess you got to have the ball. Play number one. You're going to Juwan Jennings on a slant, see if you can take it to the house.
Dude, that'd be awesome. What if that happens?
Mm.
I'm texting you immediately.
Okay.
I hope it doesn't happen to kick off the second half.
Yeah, it wouldn't probably mean as much.
Well, not only that, I might not see it in real time, I wouldn't be able to text you.
If it's 28-3 and you go on play number one in the second half to the end zone to make it 28-10, doesn't mean quite as much.
No, it doesn't. And then jumping out to could you imagine those Rammer Jammers just having to be quiet for a minute? That'd be amazing. That's what I call the Alabama fans, Rammer Jammers.
You're right, I got it.
Yeah.
To have their lead cut to 28-10?
No, I said at the play number
one.
Yeah,
okay, we're back to the first thing.
6-7 nothing, right off the jump.
Sure.
Stun them. You got to do something unorthodox. You got to go for it, fourth down.
They wouldn't be the only one stunned. So we'll see what happens coming up on Saturday with Bama favored by 34.5.
Oh, so it's down a point.
Yeah, I did look up the point spread. 2009, 14.5 was the point spread. So Tennessee was a big underdog, not as big of an underdog as it will be on Saturday.
Yeah, the paths have definitely diverged from 2009 to now. Alabama has been on a better trajectory, so to you know, than Tennessee. We were doing some number crunching before the show, just to give people an idea of how we dive down these rabbit holes. Kirby Smart and Mark Richt actually have very similar records. They're only a couple of games difference to this point of their careers at the University of Georgia. And, you know, when you start looking at how Mark Richt got fired and he had 50 wins, four years? It was 5 years.
I'm sorry, at the end?
Yeah, at the end. His last 5 years.
He had 50 wins in the last 5 years.
Yeah, so he had 50 wins.
10 per year.
And so we were sitting there, okay, how far back do you have to go to get to 50 for Tennessee? You have to go the whole 2010s.
Yes. Yeah. You have to go back into the 2010 season.
Yeah.
In terms of full seasons. Yeah.
Yeah. Dooley's first year. It starts in November, the first week of November, and then go to now, and you would get 50 wins. If you go back to the whole time, Tennessee is 57-61 in the 2010s.
It's not been a great decade. The thing is,
it's coming to an end.
The decade?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe this was just an unlucky cycle down for Tennessee.
Yeah, feeling better about the 20s. Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
How could you feel worse? The 2015 game, similar situation. I'm seeing a variation, but it looks like the point spread opened at 14.5 for the 2015 game as well. So the two games Tennessee has been close in the fourth quarter against Alabama since Nick Saban arrived, Bama was favored by 14.5 in 2009 and 2015.
Yeah.
34.5 right now. Opened at 35.5.
Yeah. And you had two very different quarterback styles too. Tyler Bray versus Josh Dobbs. You know,
Crompton.
Crompton. Yeah, that's right. Jonathan Crompton. Tyler Bray was coming in the next year.
Yeah. Still different.
Yeah, still very different styles. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it means.
Probably not much. We'll come back. Recruiting roundup, your thoughts on Tennessee, Alabama as well. We are with you until 3 o'clock and some NFL chatter coming up at 2:30. But how Tennessee's win against Mississippi State might have helped the Vols on the recruiting trail. We'll get to that coming up on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180, I'm here hyping up the Chicago Bulls off the air.
Yeah, all fired up. NBA League Pass. You're pumped.
I said it's T-minus 6 days. They'll play against the Hornets next Wednesday.
All right.
Yeah. All right, we'll move on to stuff you care about here on Sports 180. Thanks for being with us with Heather Harrington and Joel Silverberg. I'm Josh Ward. Recruiting Roundup presented by Denso Manufacturing. You know, recruiting never stops to Tennessee. As they've been fighting through this season, they've still focused on what's going on in the recruiting trail to build for the future. It never stops at Denso Manufacturing in Athens and Maryville. It's a game changer, and Tennessee won a game this past weekend that it really needed to win. One for the team, for the season. If you're going to try to get to a bowl game, you had to have this game this past weekend. And with the win, doesn't solve all your recruiting problems, but it sure beats the alternative if Tennessee had lost the game. And on Football Futures on Monday, I talked to Jesse Simonton of AllQuest.com about that, about how Tennessee needed a win. And right now, it helps that Tennessee was able to get that win against Mississippi State.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about it coming out of the heels of the Georgia game where they had, you know, a couple nice drives, but you still end up losing by 4 touchdowns. They needed to see it. This is something we've hammered home really since the preseason that, you know, guys want to see progress. They want to see that tangible growth. Now, it's not going to always be linear, and it certainly hasn't been the case for Tennessee through, you know, 6 weeks so far this season. But Saturday was an example that you know, the staff can say, hey, we out-schemed another staff. And not only did we out-scheme them, the players that we have developed now through the first month and a half of the year, you know, they finally kind of were able to implement that game plan and go out and make plays. So that was the offensive line finishing that 91-yard touchdown drive. They strung together probably 3 of the 4 best running plays in succession that they have all season. Or the defense, you know, just creating all the havoc, you know, getting some turnovers, but really out-scheming and kind of fooling Mississippi State on multiple pressure packages, sending guys from various angles. You know, you get 7 sacks and you have 3 big defensive linemen that you're going all uncommitted, all guys at your major priorities, Octavius Oxendine, Jay Hardy, and Tyler Barron, all there for that. You know, that certainly didn't hurt.
Jesse Simonton, VolQuest.com. Yeah, so why don't we keep the conversation there. Early reaction, what can you tell about the impression made by Tennessee on those guys, especially Oxendine, getting him into town to see Tennessee?
Yeah, I think Tennessee has made a move with Octavius. He was a guy that Tennessee and Tennessee that some staffers felt really good about early in the summer. And then, you know, he didn't make it back up here. He'd been to Kentucky several times. The Wildcats were feeling pretty good about where they stood with Octavius heading into this weekend. And I think Tennessee has kind of flipped it on its heels. They knew they had to play catch up. They kind of blew the visit out of the water. He was the only official visitor, and I think that was kind of key for them to kind of put multiple coaches, whether it's Brandon Dedrick, the quality control coach who's kind of been big behind the scenes for them for the Vols there, or Tracy Rocker, Derek Ansley, you know, and then head coach Jeremy Pruitt. So Tennessee feels like they made up a lot of ground there, not over, but they feel like that they're in much better standing with Octavius than they were just a week ago. They continue to like their chances and spots with Tyler Barron and Jay Hardy. It's kind of a win, not if. You can't outright rule out a team like Ohio State where Barron did visit a couple weeks ago. But a win like that on Saturday, that was something he was looking to see from the Vols. For them to get that done, you know, he has a teammate, Cooper Mays, committed, former teammate, close friend, Keyshawn Lawrence, committed. I think Tennessee has kind of continued to further help themselves there. Same with Jay Hardy. Again, when you're looking at kind of the foundation of the class, if you can add those guys to the mix, you know, start at least pick off several of those guys in Memphis, then you're looking at really the foundation there, and then it's kind of what can they build around those guys to kind of close it out in December and then February.
Yeah, getting a win and avoiding a loss, Barron and Hardy would be a couple of guys you would point to there, wouldn't you? Because if Tennessee had lost to Mississippi State with Bama coming up next, then it would be easy for those guys to start to at least say or think, you know, I don't know, maybe I need to think elsewhere. Seeing Tennessee beat Mississippi State can maybe help reaffirm some of the thoughts they already had on Tennessee in favor of the Vols, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think especially for Tyler, just, you know, having talked to some people around that recruitment, I do think that, not that he was getting skittish, but there was some kind of, all right, you know, I believe in that staff. I believe in what the direction of the program. But at some time, it's, again, you got to kind of see the fruits of the labor a little bit. And so for them to beat, it was a toss-up game. I know Tennessee was a 7-point underdog. I didn't really understand the Vegas line. I thought it was, you know, I was not surprised that Tennessee won, although I did think that Mississippi State came in as the better team. But Tennessee just played better on Saturday, and that's all that mattered. They had a better game plan. They survived the fact that their starting quarterback threw two red zone interceptions, got knocked out with a concussion, had a starting linebacker kicked out of the game. You got a safety that breaks his leg, and they win the game largely on the backs of a bunch of guys who have, you know, been much maligned the last couple of years in a slew of kind of Butch Jones castoffs, whether it was Tyler Byrd, Tim Jordan, Matthew Butler, you know, these guys. Nigel Warrior's probably put together the best two games of his career in back-to-back weeks. So that it's something to build on, and it is something that this staff can say, hey, you know, we're starting to get the best out of these guys. You know, look what we could do with you.
Jesse Simonton, VolQuest.com on Football Futures earlier this week. So Jay Hardy down in Chattanooga and Tyler Barron locally at Knoxville Catholic, a couple of guys to pay attention to. Tennessee did lose out on Chris Morris, who announced yesterday that he is committing to Texas A&M, visited there this past weekend. Offensive lineman, native of Memphis. Tennessee, I'm sure, will continue to recruit there, but Texas A&M getting the commitment obviously gives the Aggies a huge advantage. So Tennessee will continue to recruit a number of linemen. Oxendine with his visit this past weekend. Tennessee has to feel better there as well. Long way to go, and Tennessee needs more wins. Just beating Mississippi State does not solve all the recruiting concerns out there, but it sure helped to get that win. Recruiting never stops at Tennessee, and it never stops at Denso Manufacturing. In Athens and Maryville, it's a game changer, making the recruiting roundup on Sports 180 happen each and every week. Some numbers that might be interesting to you in a moment on the Tennessee-Alabama game. Lee has been very patient. You're on Sports 180. Lee, thanks for the call. Short on time this segment, but wanted to work you in. You had some thoughts on the Bama game coming up.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Yeah, doing well.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, let me ask you this on with UT and Alabama, and I've brought this up several times. Do we ever go to where you rotate in that West Division? I mean, does Tennessee have to play Alabama every year? I mean, it seems like it's a really tough deal. Do you think Tennessee fans would just – because all my family are from – they're all Alabama fans, and they don't look at this as a rivalry. They just look at it as a stomp. I mean, what's your feelings on that? I mean, would you ever get rid of this? I mean, I don't understand the holding on to the Tennessee-Alabama rivalry, which it's really not anymore. I guess it's 12. I don't know how many straight.
Yeah, 12 straight. Lee, it's a very good question.
Anyway, it's
frustrating for Tennessee.
Thank you,
Lee. We appreciate it. I come back to the SEC schedule. The focus here would be Tennessee-Alabama, and that's part of it. But I think the SEC scheduling is absurd right now. An 8-game schedule for a 14-team league with 7 teams in each division doesn't make any sense.
There's no conference identity, too.
It is a rivalry of streaks. Now, this is the biggest, easily, in terms of not only the wins, but how lopsided the games have been. But, I think if the SEC is going to stick with 8 games, they should not have the permanent cross-division game.
Yeah, and I know that would be hard for a lot of people to get over. But think about also if you didn't play that game for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden Alabama pops back up on your schedule, how much more it could mean. And that's somebody, you know, I grew up watching Texas A&M, and both programs have survived not playing that game. And they've actually thrived. I mean, Texas A&M has been thriving.
Yeah.
I think after getting Texas off of their schedule and leaving the Big 12 and coming to the SEC. So, I mean, the Tennessee program would survive it. There would be older fans that would be disappointed.
It wouldn't just survive it. It would benefit from it if the game went off. One quick note. Tyler Wyatt sent us this. Since Nick Saban has taken over Alabama, Alabama's actually performed minus 2.4 points worse than the expected outcome in Tuscaloosa. In Knoxville, Bama has performed 12.83 points better than the expected outcome. But Bama's also been a 20.4 point favorite on average in Tuscaloosa, 17.4 point favorite in Knoxville. Either way, that shows it's been awfully lopsided along the way. We will move on to the NFL coming up next. Alan Bell, Sportsline.com, joins us. We'll talk about tonight's game and the weekend coming up next on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180, thank you for being with us on this Thursday afternoon. We're here until 3 o'clock. Little Eric Church coming back in. Time to welcome to the show Alan Bell, Sportsline.com. He's on Twitter at AlanBell247. Joins us to talk a little NFL. Alan, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Appreciate y'all having me. Y'all doing all right?
Yeah, doing really well. How are the Chiefs going to be doing after tonight? It's a big game for them going up against the Broncos, who have won the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, you're right. It is a big game, you know, and if you look at the line, the Chiefs are only favored by 3 in Denver, which looks a little wild, but then you kind of look at, you know, kind of the numbers inside. The Denver Broncos, their defense hasn't allowed a touchdown in 9 straight quarters. They've been playing really good football. But I'll say this, Kansas City has to win. You know, it's not do or die for them, but this is a big one. Like, they need to take care of business. And an interesting note about that game. So do you remember, like, the ice bucket challenges
in
2014? You remember those?
Yeah.
Sure. That was the last time that Kansas City lost in Denver, right? Like, they've won for 5 years straight out there. So I think they take care of business tonight. But it's going to be closer than people think.
What do you think has been – I mean, is it truly all just Pat Mahomes and having the banged-up ankle? Or what has – why has the Chiefs been on a skid for the last couple of weeks?
Well, I think it's, you know, kind of complimentary football, and I hate to use, like, a cliche like that, but, you know, you look at their defense. They have the 30 or 31st, you know, ranked rushing defense in the NFL, so their defense is kind of getting gashed a little bit, and you know, it's not giving the offense, you know, per se, the best field position that they had, you know, last year or even the first couple weeks, and then Mahomes, for sure. Like, that has something to do with it as well. So, you know, I think it's just an adjustment period, you know, for this team, and they're going to have to, you know, have longer sustained drives, you know, to put points up, and then their defense is going to have to kind of clamp down. You know, the good thing for them, and if anybody watched the Broncos at Titans game last week, you know, the Broncos offense didn't look good at all, right? Like, that was just a boring offensive game. So Kansas City should get a little bit of reprieve there. What they have to do is just put some points up early and get Denver really out of their system as a whole.
Alan Bell, Sportsline.com. Alan, the Tennessee Titans making the quarterback change with Ryan Tannehill now in as the starter, replacing Marcus Mariota. Thoughts on the move, and then thoughts on the issues that are there, because they're plural for the Titans.
They are certainly plural. I think they had to do it. You know, I mean, if you look at Marcus, you know, especially the last, you know, just a couple games, I mean, it, something's just wrong, you know, beyond, you know, really what his physical, you know, limitations have been. I think he's in his own head. He knows exactly what the situation is. And, you know, I kind of spoke this week that I think it would be good for Marcus to just kind of get away for a little bit, right? Like, get away for a week. There's nothing in that facility that's going to help him, you know, pressing and trying to work harder. That's not going to help. It's going to hurt him. So I think the Titans really did need to make this move. You know, we'll see, you know, if Tannehill has any big difference for the team. Like you said, you know, the issues are plural. There's an offensive line problem that's not only halting, you know, the quarterback from having more than 1 second, you know, to get the ball out. But you look at Derrick Henry, he's got, you know, the most negative rushing plays since Larry Johnson with the Chiefs in 2007, right? Like, this offensive line is killing everything. The crazy part, though, again, is that this defense hasn't given up more than 20 points in a game. Like, they should be 5-1 right now. So we'll see. Tannehill could throw it a little bit better, but you know, the Chargers, they've lost two in a row as well. And interesting note, both of these teams have been shut out in the first half in their last two games, which were both losses.
Who would you bet on to make the playoffs, the Oakland Raiders or the Dallas Cowboys?
Ooh, great question. I'm going to say the Dallas Cowboys only because, and here's the interesting thing, the NFC is much more difficult than the AFC. I just don't believe in the Raiders per se yet. Now, I'll give them credit. Like, what they're doing right now, what John Gruden is doing is incredible because they have injuries everywhere. They have no wide receivers. They're winning football games. They're playing good ball. But Dallas is just way too good. Like, I know that they're on, you know, a skid right now, and those things happen in the NFL. It's a really long season. But if Dallas just gets, you know, first, healthy, because they're dealing with their own injuries, but two, they get this offense going again, Dallas can be one of the top four teams in the NFL. They're that good.
Alan, hang on 1 second. I need to block and unfollow you on Twitter real quick, and then we'll get back. And good. Alan Bell with us. Follow him on Twitter, at AlanBell247. This is a big game, though, isn't it, for the Cowboys and the Eagles, both sides. And Doug Peterson, confident at the beginning of the week, maybe walking back a little bit, but a huge game in the NFC East coming up Sunday night.
Yeah, it's a monster game, you know, and this is the type of game that's really going to define, you know, who wins the NFC East, right? And you've got two teams that, you know, are just kind of playing at odd levels, you know, like they're better than they're playing, although you'll see some sparks, especially defensively with Philadelphia. It's just a monster game. I'm glad that we get it on Sunday night. It's the type of game where Dallas needs to come out and just show their authority again over the NFC, because what we saw the first three games, and I know that the talent level of the teams wasn't that high, but it doesn't matter. Like, or that part didn't matter because their offense was rolling. And if they can get out of playing conservative ball and running on first and second down and get back to passing, Dallas can take this thing. But it's going to be a good one. I mean, the Eagles and Doug Peterson, they're not going to let them have it. Sure.
Well, and the biggest thing is Dallas has got to start fast. I mean, they've been digging themselves these ridiculous holes, you know, the past couple of weeks, especially against Green Bay. I mean, that game was over. Now they mounted a great comeback and maybe covered at the end. I don't know. Maybe that was what they were going for. But they were never, in my opinion, going to win that game because they were too far down.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. And it's so incredibly vital in the NFL to, you know, it's going to be impossible to have a lead, right, on every game. It's just not going to happen. You know, NFL teams are too good. However, you just can't get down like that because it changes everything of how aggressive you can play on defense, which changes everything of field position back for the offense, the score. I mean, you just have to stay in these games. So I'm with you. That's the absolute key. If Dallas can get up, it's tough to beat them because their defense is that good too. And their defense has to step it up. I'll say this. You know, last year their defense was a top five in the NFL, and they're not playing to that level. They have to figure it out.
Alan Bell, Sportsline.com, is with us. What do we make of the Rams' moves, plural, including bringing Jalen Ramsey in from the Jacksonville Jaguars? And that was a big asking price to get Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, huge asking price, right? I mean, you're giving up two first-round picks and a fourth. You know, and you look at it and say, all right, from 2017 to 2021, the Rams aren't going to have a first-round pick, which is crazy. However, you know what? Like, I know how valuable draft picks are, but the ultimate goal in a draft pick is getting somebody who's as good as Jalen Ramsey. And you could take five drafts, and you might not get somebody as good as Jalen Ramsey. So I'm all for it. I like teams that are in a Super Bowl window being as aggressive as possible, because those opportunities, not only in football, but in life, like, they just don't come around that often. So when you get it and you get the chance, you have to go all in. So we'll see how they do. You know, again, a cornerback is not going to necessarily fix all of their problems. However, dude can play, right? And if he can help get that offense just better field position and a better, you know, starting point, you know, multiple times throughout the game, then it's going to help. But they've got to get offensive line, you know, fixed too. Running game, obviously, with Todd Gurley, who knows what that's going to be. But long story short, I liked it. It was a good move.
Hey, and before you go, Alan, penalties, again, a big topic this week, especially with what happened on Monday night. What is the conversation the rest of the season as it relates to penalties and replay and everything that's gone into what we've seen the first 6 weeks?
Yeah, so, you know, this is a classic NFL move where, you know, they had the league meeting a couple days ago, and, you know, everyone, all fans, you know, are complaining about, you know, the amount, the absurd amount of penalties, which are on pace for the most, I think, since like 2005. But the NFL comes back and is like, you know what, it's going exactly how we thought that it would, and we're happy, which is just pure insanity. I don't think we're going to really see any change, you know, and especially if you look at, like, you know, coaches challenging pass interference. I think they're like 3-32, you know, in getting those overturned, and none of them have been overturned since week 3. So it's not even really worth it to throw that challenge. But, you know, we'll see after the year. What they cannot do is have fans upset, because people will turn games off, and they've shown that a couple years ago. So they're going to have to fix something.
Alan, big football weekend coming up. What can fans find when they go to sportsline.com?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, we're going to look at it from an analytical, you know, kind of betting, wagering type of play. So, you know, if that's your deal, come check us out. We're going to simulate each game 10,000 times, and we'll grade, you know, spread bets, money line, totals, things like that. We'll get you set up on all games, Saturday and Sunday. You know, but if you just like a good analytical look inside of games, we have that for you too. So go to sportsline.com, click around, check it out. I assure you, you're going to like it. It's something a little bit different than you're probably used to.
Yeah, not just football as well. NHL underway, Major League Baseball still going on, and the NBA is a week away. So other sports as well besides just football.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And then DFS and fantasy, yeah. You've got experts out there too. So yeah, you're exactly right, man. I appreciate it.
Follow him on Twitter at AlanBell247. Alan, appreciate the time as always. Thanks, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, thank you too. Appreciate it.
Alan Bell every week here on Sports 180.
Sports is about to get really busy. Those computers are going to be working overtime in Sports Line.
Yeah. You ready?
Yeah, if they have some more favorable outcomes for Tennessee. They were wrong last week.
Those computers were wrong. Yeah. Simulations went the other
way. Watson.
Yeah, there you go.
Watson always beat those chess masters?
Every time.
Really? Not good.
Does that concern you?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. The computers are, they're right more times than they're wrong.
Where do you lean with the number for Tennessee, Alabama right now? Don't have to stick to it. 34.5, where do you lean right now?
I kind of made it a rule earlier this season to not even predict Tennessee to cover when the line gets over 20.
Okay.
But now that it's over 30... I don't know.
Yeah, this is the second time the line's been that high.
Yeah.
Georgia was favored by more than 20 and covered, but needed a somewhat fortunate, I guess, fumble in return to get there. So
they got there. Yeah.
But they got there. They got there.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, I mean, I would love to see Tennessee cover, but you're still.
Yeah. The line I'm concerned with, I got two bills on 39. Chuck Cavalaris's number on the sports horse this past Sunday.
Yeah.
So he went a little higher. So I took the Vols plus 39.
Yeah. Kelly would never let you bet two bills on a Chuck line.
Two very fake bills. We come back for a final segment, the Power Poll driven by Ted Russell Ford, top five NFL teams, and then sports talk at 3 o'clock on the Sports Animal. Final segment here of Sports 180. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. We will be back tomorrow at 12 o'clock for a Football Friday. We'll be out at Cheers at Chodo. Looking forward to being out there tomorrow, Heather.
Yeah, it's going to be absolutely beautiful. So cannot wait to see what the lake is looking like. And don't forget, Cheers at Chodo, they're open all year round now. So under new management, and the food
out
there.
They've done a great job at that place.
Yeah, the food out there is totally fantastic. I actually went for my birthday That's where we ended up going via the water, so you can arrive by land or sea. And remember, the lunch special is $6.99. So come make plans. Come out and celebrate Bama Week with us tomorrow.
Ooh, 68-degree afternoon tomorrow.
Maybe
Cheers
we do want
to
be on the patio.
Yeah, yeah, stop by and see us tomorrow. Cheers at Chota. We'll be out there from 12 until 3 with Sports 180. Yeah, Sports Talk's about to take over in just a few minutes. John Wilkerson will be a part of the show. We say hello to him again. John, hello.
It's been forever. Good to talk to you guys.
Yes, I was thinking the same thing. So you're getting ready for a big Sports Talk Rivalry Thursday coming up in just a few minutes.
That's right, here at Farragut, where tonight it's the Admirals against the Bulldogs. I don't think either team, with their respective records, are where they want to be, but both are in position to make the playoffs. It's all about finishing strong, getting the best seed possible, and Bearden is trying to get a second straight win against Farragut, as it ended a losing streak last year. With the 17-13 win, Admirals, though, have won 15 of the last 17 meetings, so much easier said than done for the Bearden Bulldogs when they play here at Farragut.
Always a big deal. This is a big week. Week 9 of the high school football season is here. It's hard to believe that we are here, but here we are. So as we get ready for Sports Talk coming up in just a few minutes, let's hit today's Power Poll.
Captain, we're losing power on the warp engine.
Nuclear power pants.
What's up? I'm Kenny Powers.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
I have the power!
With great power comes great responsibility.
Full power, Mr. Scott.
The Power Pole, driven by Ted Russell Ford. Two locations to serve you, Kingston Pike and Parkside Drive.
Alrighty, on a Thursday, it is week 9 of the high school football season, week 8 in college football, and then week 7 of the NFL begins tonight with the Chiefs and the Broncos. We have our top 5 NFL teams. John, would you like to lead us off?
Why, sure. And I will say that neither team competing tonight is top 5 worthy at this point in time. At number 5, I go with the Green Bay Packers. I know some people might have them a little bit higher, but they keep flirting with it. There's something to be said about a team that finds a way to win when all is said and done. But boy, they have been so close to losing a lot more than just the one game they've lost. So Green Bay number 5, Seattle number 4. I go with the 49ers at number 3, the lone unbeaten team in the NFC. Even though they have a loss, I have the Saints ahead of the 49ers in my NFC pecking order. And, of course, at the top of the heap, the man or the men, New England.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
They're not bad.
No, they are not. Heather Harrington, your top 5 NFL teams.
Okay, I'm going to do honorable mention, and this is probably dumb of me, but honorable mention to the Seahawks. I have the Texans edging them for my number 5 spot because I do think they've been on a roll. I'll probably regret putting them at number 5 ahead of the Seahawks, but they needed some other AFC love. There's no other AFC teams besides number 1. So 4, I have Green Bay. Number 3, I have the 49ers as well. They are right behind the New Orleans Saints. And then number 1 is going to be New England.
All righty. We have a lot of similarities in our list. John and I have the same 5 teams. Houston, I guess, would get an honorable mention. And if that's the case, I can't put Kansas City there after just losing to Houston.
Yep.
So it's very NFC heavy. I have Green Bay number 5. Their record is what it is. They did get some help, I think, this past Monday, but they also had to come back, and they did that. So I have Green Bay number 5, Seattle number 4. John, Russell Wilson is making a legitimate, still early, but MVP case, wouldn't you say?
Very much so. Obviously, the Seahawks are nowhere near to where they are right now without him, so I think that he would be the leader in the clubhouse.
It's very impressive what the Saints have continued to do, winning without Drew Brees in different ways. I have the Saints number 3. San Francisco's unbeaten. I'm going to give that defense a ton of credit, and they've gotten the job done. And the Rams have problems, but San Francisco just went out there and pummeled them this past week, the week after doing the same to the Cleveland Browns. So I have San Francisco number 2 and the New England Patriots number 1. A sweep across the top again for New England. The Powerball driven by Ted Russell Ford. Drive on down to Kingston Pike or Parkside Drive to check out all that they have to offer. You can do the same online. TedRussellFord.net, locally owned and operated with the lifetime warranty at Ted Russell Ford Lincoln.
Our guy that likes to tweet us about the 49ers love, hey, we all 3 put them in our power poll and
that's right,
and 3rd or higher.
All top 3.
Yep, all top 3. So, hey, no hate tweets today.
They're getting the love, absolutely. John, we love extra time with you as always on a Thursday. What can we look forward to coming up next on Sports Talk?
Well, as you mentioned, we're here at Farragut High School, and we will have comments from Tennessee coach Jeremy Pruitt. He met the media after practice yesterday. We'll have remarks from Tennessee defensive lineman Matthew Butler, as well as Vols basketball freshman Drew Pember. Austin Price will join us from Rivalry Thursday to break down the Bulldogs and the Admirals. It'll be time for Slap Shots with Mike Murray, president and GM of the Ice Bears. Their season opens tomorrow night. He joins us at 4:35. Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com for hour number three, a Tennessee football practice report with Eric Kane. All that and more today on Sports Talk, leading into Tennessee Sports Night with Will West and Heather Harrington.
That's right. And John, there's often the debate of what is the best time of year in sports. Is the middle of football season underrated because you have all the different sports going on in different phases, baseball postseason, football really ratcheting up, and then you get NBA and hockey starting up as well?
Yeah, I think it is the busiest time. It is the best time. You've got NASCAR and its playoffs. Although I thought ESPN really reached yesterday. The Celtics whitewashed the Cavaliers in the preseason, and it said, for the Cavs, are these bad losses a sign of things to come? And it's like, who was expecting anything different?
Stock down on the Cleveland Cavaliers.
They had three first-round picks last year. The only way you do that is by being really bad. So yeah. I'm just saying, what were you expecting?
Yeah. You're going to have to really change my win total expectation for the Cavs based on that preseason game against the Boston Celtics.
Wow.
I had them at 28. Now
that's a tough one.
Drop them down to 27.
Yeah, well. All right, back to the drawing board for Cleveland. We'll see. Hey, John, we appreciate all the time today and look forward to Sports Talk here in just a few minutes.
You know, they won a championship in 2016.
Is that right?
That's right.
That's John Wilkerson living in the past.
Yeah. Living it up as well. All right. Thanks a lot,
recent
John.
Past, though. I will say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Heather, it looks like we've run ourselves out of time here on Sports 180.
We really have. All that NBA preseason talk. Sorry, Shadab.
Yeah.
We're out of time.
Cost
maybe tomorrow.
The time there. We'll try again tomorrow at Cheers at Chodo at 12 o'clock. Joel Silverberg, thank you as well. This is FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.